Morning. I'm glad to see so many people able to make it in, and thank you for that. The court calls United States v. Davis. Counsel for the appellant, please.
Chief Judge Baker, members of the court, may it please the court. I'm Captain Brian Andes, and I, along with Major Vincent Schuler, represent the appellant, Sergeant Ronald J. Davis. The Army Court erred when it found that the military judge's failure to instruct on the affirmative defense of defensive property was harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. The government cannot prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the error did not contribute to the verdict because there are facts that are relevant to the defense of defensive property that the panel never had the opportunity to apply to defensive property due to the fact that we're not properly instructed on defensive property. First, I'd like to show why the elements of self-defense are different from defensive property. Under self-defense, a reasonable person would have to believe there are grounds to anticipate an immediate physical harm, whereas defensive property, a reasonable person would have to fear that his property is in immediate danger of a trespass. With regard to the second prong of both of these self-defense, the reasonable person would have to intend to use their weapon as a deterrent, where under defensive property, a reasonable person would have to use an amount of force, or would have to believe the amount of force used was required to protect the property. So it's kind of a deter under self-defense and a protection of property under defensive property.
And why was the use of a weapon in this case necessary to protect against a trespass?
The question, well, to answer your question, in Sergeant Davis's mind, he had to believe that his behavior was reasonable and that the amount of force used was required in order to protect his property. And there's kind of an escalation of force. If you look at the facts...
Is it an objective test?
It's a subjective test.
It's a subjective test.
Yeah.
What he thought.
What he thought. And specifically looking at the record of trial, Sergeant Davis testifies, he's concerned, if you look at Joint Appendix at page 142, quote, if we get into a fist fight, this dude hits me, knocks me out, what's going to happen to my family, my house, my girlfriend? He's concerned about what's going to happen to his house, subjectively, and there's kind of an escalation of force. Sergeant Davis, his wife is so worried, she calls him while he's out, says, hey, you need to come home now and handle this. Sergeant Davis then goes home. When he gets home, he testifies that he tells...
Can I ask you to put a little more structure in your argument in response to Judge Erdman's question? This is a case of three reasonables. Is it not? Reasonable belief that the property was at risk, reasonable force necessary to prevent the trespass, and a reasonable amount of time for the guests to evacuate the property. Do you agree that there are three reasonables involved here or not, first for the framework?
Yes, Your Honor, I agree that there are the three reasonable things, that the property is at risk, that there is a reasonable amount of force to eject the trespasser, and that there is a reasonable amount of time.
Okay, now, the reason I wanted to put that structure in is because you're going through the facts, and rather than go through the facts three different times for three different aspects of this case, I was wondering if you could now address Judge Erdman's question, but do so first by telling us why the property was reasonably, there was a reasonable belief that the property was at risk, then explain why it was, there was a reasonable amount of time given for SS to leave, and then explain why it was reasonable to use the force that was used to prevent the trespass.
Property is at risk. In Sergeant Davis's mind, he pulls up to his house. Well, first he receives a phone call from his wife telling him he needs to come home and handle a situation that she felt was beyond her abilities to handle by herself. She didn't express any fear of being physically harmed, but looking at the record, either she wanted to calm the situation down, or it would be reasonable for Sergeant Davis to have viewed it as either calm the situation down or to remove Specialist SS and Miss AR from his property. Sergeant Davis goes home, sees Specialist SS, tells him that he and Miss AR need to leave. That's a move to get them off of his property, so his property's at risk. He then goes into his house.
Why is the property at risk? Because he may want them to leave because he doesn't like them or they're wearing the wrong clothing or something. Why, what in what you just said indicates that the property is itself at risk?
It's, well, looking into what happens next, I guess this kind of lays the groundwork. That when Sergeant Davis comes back out, there's somebody that he saw in his driveway that he told to leave, that not only didn't leave, but is now standing in his doorway. And in Sergeant Davis's mind, he had already told him to leave. He didn't leave. He's now closer to being in his property than he was before. Sergeant Davis then testifies that he told him to leave again. And according to Sergeant Davis and his wife, Specialist SS takes a swing at Sergeant Davis. And so it kind of brings to the reasonable conclusion of what's there left to do for Sergeant Davis. And really, it's not a matter of so much what was reasonable or what wasn't reasonable, what this court or the Army Corps found reasonable or unreasonable, is what would a rational panel, could a rational panel have found that Sergeant Davis acted reasonably
conceitedly, the wife did not feel in any physical danger, right?
She didn't testify as
right, okay. What you really have is an embarrassing affray between two people that happens to be taking place on your lawn. Now, that's embarrassing. It may bring the neighbors out. It may show that you associate with the wrong kind of people. But where's the danger here that warrants the use of deadly force, as opposed to simple public embarrassment?
As Sergeant Davis testified to, and as his wife testified, Mrs. Davis testified, that Specialist SS took a swing at Sergeant Davis.
First of all, he testified that he told him to leave before he went into the house.
Yes, Your Honor. Yes.
And the other guy testified, no, he didn't.
He said he didn't hear it.
Or he didn't hear him. He didn't hear any such instruction, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. So there's some evidence, namely Davis's say-so, that he told him scram, and then he didn't scram, and he came up to the door?
Yes, yes.
Okay. And when does the alleged swing take place?
In the doorway. So after Sergeant Davis told Specialist SS to leave, according to Sergeant Davis, while he was standing in his driveway, and then again when Specialist SS was standing in Sergeant Davis's doorway, Sergeant Davis testified that he told him to leave again, and that's when Specialist SS took a swing at Sergeant Davis, and Mrs. Davis testifies to the same, that Specialist SS...
That he took the swing?
Yes.
Okay.
Specialist SS is the only person that says Sergeant Davis...
Davis took the swing first. Okay.
And had the panel been properly instructed, they could have found that Sergeant Davis had the right to be the initial aggressor in the submission.
If the members found he wasn't entitled to self-defense...
Yes, Your Honor.
Isn't it a fortiori from that he's not entitled to defensive property, which is a lesser thing?
I would argue, Your Honor, that it's not so much that it's a lesser, it's a different. There are facts in the record that apply only to defensive property that don't apply to self-defense. And,
if he took a swing at him, doesn't that apply to self-defense?
It does.
And the members didn't believe that. Or members didn't believe he was putting... Members didn't believe self-defense was warranted. Didn't find self-defense.
It also goes to defensive property. Sergeant Davis even testified that what's going to happen to his property, as well as on closing, if you look at the closing argument, Joint Appendix page 228 to 241, the defense counsel makes arguments that are related to defensive property. Defense counsel argues, quote, before Sergeant Davis goes into his house, before he does that, he tells them, I've had it, you all need to get the heck out of here, you need to go. Joint Appendix 232 to 233, Sergeant Davis, quote, exercising his right to defend his home, pushed him out of the house.
He wasn't in the house, was he?
He was in the doorway of that.
He was at the door.
Okay. Pushed him out of the door.
Is there any indication that he tried to force his way through the door?
No, but he was getting closer. He went from the driveway to the doorway. I mean, there's a progression on Specialist SS's side. Additionally, it came out of
With respect to some evidence, what is the best evidence, in your view, that places SS near, close, or in the doorway? Whose testimony and on what page?
I'll have to get you an exact page.
Clearly, there's three different versions. And this is your opportunity to tell us which version you favor.
Well,
as creating some evidence.
Sergeant Davis testifies to his subjective thoughts at Joint Appendix at page 142 as to what he was thinking when Specialist SS was in his doorway, as well as Mrs. Davis testifies to Joint Appendix.
Right, but what I'm looking for the specific words, in doorway, crashing through the door, standing on the front lawn, what is the best some evidence of the relationship of SS to the door? You can do it on
134.
Okay.
He lunged toward me with a punch, according to Sergeant Davis. And Joint Appendix 134, Specialist SS came towards Sergeant Davis, who then told him to, quote, get the hell out of here and pushed him back. That's according to Sergeant Davis. Additionally, with regard to Specialist SS's testimony, it came out of trial that Specialist SS not only had anger management issues, but his credibility was called into question by three separate witnesses.
Hang on, just to finish the question. So the best evidence in your view that he was in or near the door was what you just stated from JA 134. You can come back to that on rebuttal if you wish.
Yes, for now, yeah. I'll let's come back to that on rebuttal, sir.
Okay, what makes it reasonable here to use deadly force or the threat of deadly force?
The escalation of force on Sergeant Davis's behalf. There's really
Which is what?
Not much else for Sergeant Davis to do.
Which is what? Taking a swing at him?
Being swung at by a specialist.
Well, but he had the deadly force before he was swung at. Didn't he?
No.
Didn't he go into his story as he went into the house, he said, "Oh, there's my pistol." Stuck it in his back pocket to put it away, and then exited, whereupon he was swung at, right?
He had the deadly force in his back pocket.
He had the deadly force in his back pocket before he was swung at.
Well, he didn't use it. Specialist SS didn't know about it until after he swung at it, according to Sergeant Davis's testimony.
Well, I mean, and which way does that cut?
That's exactly the issue, because the Army Corps erred by finding that it was not harmless beyond reasonable doubt, because it can... And it is harmless. It is.
Well, no, but that's not my question. My question is, what in this set to makes it reasonable to use deadly force or the threat thereof? You know, because it was unloaded, but it's still the threat of deadly force. I mean, you know, SS didn't know it was unloaded.
Because Sergeant Davis feared that his property would be trespassed upon by a Specialist SS.
Now, where is there testimony that he feared for his property? That's the question.
When he was worried about what would happen to his property, to his house, after a Specialist SS punched him, and I think it's important also...
Now, where in the record is there anything that he was concerned, worried about his property?
Just Joint Appendix at 142, when he's talking about what's going to happen to his house if he gets knocked out by Specialist SS. There's really not much else Sergeant Davis can do at that point. He's got someone who's 3 inches taller than him standing in his doorway, swinging at him, you know, took a punch at him. There's not a reasonable amount of time for him to go do something else or go back into his house. And the force that he had already used in pushing him away was obviously insufficient, because Specialist SS is still there. And the question really is, could a rational panel have found that Sergeant Davis acted reasonably under these circumstances?
Couldn't he have just closed the door and stayed in the house?
His wife is outside.
Oh, his wife is outside. Okay.
By her choice.
By her choice.
But
that's not what's at issue here. The issue is not protection of his wife. The issue is protection of his property.
Exactly. And the panel is precluded from judging any of the witnesses' credibilities in light of a proper instruction regarding defense of property. Could Sergeant Davis have been the initial aggressor? Did he act reasonably in protecting his property against Specialist SS is trespass.
Well, no. My question was, why didn't he just close the door? And the answer is because his wife was still out there. But it appears his wife wanted to be out there because he was yelling at her to get in the house, and she didn't want to come.
And there's really no testimony as to whether Sergeant Davis could... the fact that we're speculating as to whether Sergeant Davis could have closed the door or not...
Of course he could have closed the door. He was physically capable of doing so.
But this just goes to show that the government cannot prove in this case, beyond a reasonable doubt, that it did not somehow impact the verdict in the
outcome. Well, wait a minute. Now you're losing me. What, he couldn't close the door, and that shows the government didn't make its case?
Because we don't know that he could have closed the door or not. The panel would have had to make that credibility determination.
Could have or would have. Of course he could have. Nobody was physically... preventing him from doing it.
I mean, you would have had to take a step back.
Now you've totally lost me. I'm sorry. He went into the house, got the gun, came back out. He could have gone into the house, closed the door, and that would have been the end of it, except...
He was in a physical altercation with Specialist SS at that point. So he would have to break contact with Specialist SS, get back into his house... And this is really the question.
Wait a minute. Am I screwed up? Where are we? Did he not come back out and then get swung at?
When he's outside, he sees Specialist SS standing in his doorway, and Specialist SS, according to Sergeant Davis, takes a swing at Sergeant Davis. So Sergeant Davis would have had to somehow get away from Specialist SS, get back into his house, close the door.
No, okay, but that's after he came back out.
Yes, Your Honor.
After he got the gun.
Yes.
He had to go in and get the gun.
And he didn't know Specialist SS was going to be standing in his doorway.
No, but what I'm saying is he could have gone in, gotten the gun, and closed the door.
Counsel, you're out of time. I have two questions for you before you sit down. Was the wife's Article 32 testimony regarding SS pushing the door open and stepping inside the house entered into evidence at the trial and before the judge for the purpose of the instruction or not? I present that as a yes or no question.
I'll have to look that up, Your Honor.
Okay. In some state jurisdictions, the defense of your castle defense is not available in the case of an invited guest. Is there a military reason why this court or the military should favor that rule or a different rule? You can address that one on rebuttal as well.
Yes,
I can imagine what your answer will be, but I'm more interested in your articulation as to why that's the correct answer, not the fact that you would favor the defense that is best for your client.
And I would, just before I sit down, argue that Specialist SS was no longer an invited guest.
That may be your answer as well. As a matter of fact, I'm asking a legal policy question, which is some jurisdictions don't allow the defense in that case, and some do. Is there a military reason why the military should be in one camp or the other, independent of whether that's the fact of this case?
Chief, may I pose a question?
Yep.
Counsel, as you noted, the standard that we have to apply is could a rational panel have found? In the course of doing that, in your view, to what extent can this court make a credibility determination looking at the various testimony here?
This court has the power to make the credibility determination. However, this is not a case where this court should do so. And looking at a case somewhat similar to Marbury, in Marbury there were uncontested facts as to what happened in that situation. And E6 was trying to kick an E7 out of her room. There's no contest as to how she behaved and what she did. But here there's too many contested facts. In this case, you really should have been before a panel that was properly instructed as to what they should or what they could have done. They were not given those proper guidance as to the left and right limits with regard to a defensive property instruction. And therefore, beyond a reasonable doubt, the government cannot prove that it did not impact the verdict or the sentence in this case.
Everybody will have another go at it on rebuttal. Thank you, counsel. Counsel for the government.
Thank you, Your Honor. Chief Judge Baker, members of the court, may it please the court. My name is Captain Daniel Carno, along with co-counsel Major Robert Rodriguez, who represent the United States in this case. There is no prejudice in this case because the evidence is overwhelming that appellant acted as initial aggressor and the panel rejected appellant's stronger theory of self-defense, which was already instructed upon. To begin, there is overwhelming evidence here that appellant was the initial aggressor in the confrontation. Specifically, even before a weapon was drawn, appellant's initiation of a physical confrontation with the victim was not a reasonable, necessary, or justifiable use of force under the circumstances.
Do you agree with the earlier question slash statement that I made that there are three reasonables in play in this context, or potentially in play? Reasonable belief the property is at risk, reasonable force that is necessary to prevent a trespass, and reasonable amount of time to evacuate the property?
I agree, Your Honor.
And with respect to each of those reasonables, is it objective or subjective?
Well, the defense of property has two parts, actually, objective and subjective. And we believe that any argument appellant could have made would have failed on both prongs.
Which is objective and which is subjective?
Which parts of the defense?
Yeah, go through the test and say.
Yes, Your Honor. The first part is what appellant objectively, or excuse me, what appellant would have objectively to a reasonable person, whether or not he reasonably acted or would have been under apprehension that his property would have been under reasonable threat. And then the second part is whether or not he objectively believed that the force necessary to remove the victim, in this case, from the property was, in fact, required. And we believe even on that second subjective prong, the way he went inside the building or inside his home to retrieve the weapon and how he describes how he went to go pull the gun off the table and whether or not it was in the case or out of the case, that all goes to show that he didn't go in just to get the gun and bring it upstairs. No, he went to go and retrieve that weapon for the specific purpose to go and scare and intimidate special.
And what about the reasonable amount of time to evacuate the property?
In regards to that, our best evidence...
Is that subjective, objective?
It's objective, Your Honor. There are facts in this case that are obviously contested between what Specialist SS, the victim, says and what appellant says. However, there's many key facts that all witnesses agree upon, which show that appellant did not act reasonably when he immediately pushed the victim right at the front door. Now, all witnesses agree that both the victim and his girlfriend were invited guests, not appellant, but appellant's wife. All witnesses agree that appellant was both intoxicated and agitated when he returned home. And all witnesses agree that appellant did not consult with his wife when he returned. He went straight into the house and merely said he alleged that he yelled over the cars to Specialist SS, who was still out in the street, that he told him, "You guys are no longer welcome here." All witnesses also agree.
Well, all the witnesses don't agree he went straight into the house, so do they?
Appellant says that he went to Miss R.A., the girlfriend, specifically said, "You're no longer welcome here," used some coarse language, and then actually told his wife, "You need to get the hell in the house." So on his way into the house, he said he'd said that. And Miss R.A. also said that he said words to that effect, "You are no longer welcome here." It's only appellant's explanation that he said while he was going towards the house, he heard Specialist SS yelling something from out in the street where he passed him up by, when he passed him with the truck, that he says he yelled out over the cars, "You all are no longer welcome," or worse than that effect. That's the only evidence that appellant proposes that would put Specialist SS, the victim, on notice that he was no longer welcome. Not only from the standpoint of appellant saying that he's no longer invited guest, but again, we have to remember Specialist SS was invited by the wife. He was a guest of the wife, and that played some role into the reasonableness of what the appellant was thinking of. Furthermore, no witnesses say that victim ever threatened appellant or tried to enter the home. Now, Specialist SS specifically on the record, Joint Appendix 45, says he approached the door. He was trying to look, and he said he could actually see inside, saw the appellant doing something behind the couch, turned, looked back at the wife and his girlfriend, and then when he turns around, he sees the appellant coming to the door. So it's important to note that Specialist SS here was going to see where appellant was. His main objective was to determine why is he you know, why is he storming in the house? Why is the appellant acting this way? And even if the appellant had stayed near the truck, if he had gone out to the sidewalk to the street, he would have met him there. It's showing that Precious SS, the victim, came to the doorway and stopped there. He didn't try to enter the home. Now, according to the appellant's testimony, after he gives this whole story about how he came to have the weapon and put it in his back pocket, then he figures out that his wife didn't listen to him because she's stubborn, did not come in the house, so he's going to go and yell at her again to come in the house. Then magically, as he comes to the door, he says he opens the door, and right at that exact moment is when Specialist SS happens to be coming up, and that puts him under the fear and apprehension that he's about to be physically assaulted.
Well, what duty does the owner of a house have to withdraw in the face of a trespasser?
He has no duty to withdraw, Your
Honor. Okay. Was he a trespasser?
Arguably, no, because at the time...
Does the wife have to rescind the invitation? Or can the husband rescind the invitation?
Well, again, that's arguable. It's...
Arguable.
The wife was the one who invited Specialist SS.
Right, and so she tried to make peace before he got back.
Yes,
and obviously she failed because she called him and said, this thing is totally out of hand, get back here.
And all she did say, you need to come back
right
now. But she didn't get
because it's because her efforts to make peace had failed. I mean, isn't that on the record?
No, she was trying to be a peacemaker, yes, Your Honor, but she never said in her text to appellant that, you know, I give you carte blanche authority to...
I'm not suggesting that, but she did say, get back here, we've got a problem,
yes, Your Honor,
they're fighting, and I need you home, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Right,
And that's all she said. And what's also telling...
And why does she have to give him anything? She's not the sole possessor of the property, is she?
No, she's not.
Isn't it a joint tenancy of some sort?
Yes, they were married, Your Honor.
They're married, okay. So why would she have to give him permission to throw a trespasser off the joint property?
Well, it goes to the reasonableness analysis, the objective reasonableness analysis, about whether or not appellant acted reasonably. And he knew that... that Specialist SS and his girlfriend were the invited guests of his wife. He even admits that that was an agreement between the two women. So he knows that, you know, he was invited through him. He doesn't go back and consult with the wife. He doesn't go and talk to her and say, hey, what do you want me to do with this situation? He doesn't go to Specialist SS and say, hey, you know, I think you guys have been acting up. I need you to get out of here. He goes straight into his house and says, in his one alleged comment, that he yelled across the cars out into the street, and that Specialist SS just put him on notice that now he's now a trespasser. So under that reasonableness, it wasn't reasonable for him to come out, and when he comes to the doorway, immediately pushes him. Even by appellant's own words, he says, as soon as I saw him, I pushed him, and then I said, to use his words, get the fuck off my property. So it's not like he even confronted him at the doorway. And of course, Specialist SS says he's actually out on the porch and the sidewalk. Even taking an appellant's account, that if it was in the doorway, he didn't say, didn't you hear me? I just told you, you know, get the hell out of here.
What does that go to? That goes to the time, doesn't it? The time for SS to get off?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
And that goes to what Chief Judge Baker was talking about. There's no reasonable amount of time here given to Specialist SS to evacuate the property. So we have, again, the invited guests portion we already talked about. Appellant did not consult with the wife. And then, again...
Did he have a duty to consult with the wife?
No, but, again, it goes to the reasonableness that he should have known that Specialist SS in this situation might have had a legitimate question like, you know, you didn't invite me. Why are you kicking me out now? What did I even do? And because all these texts were going between the wife and appellant, it wasn't like they were all together and this was all being, you know, portrayed to both the girlfriend and Specialist SS. They didn't know. And so all Specialist SS wanted to know was basically what was the deal. And then when he was waiting there at the front door, appellant comes and immediately pushes him. So that shows that he's the initial aggressor. Not even when he retrieves the weapon and pulls that out, which of course is, you know, beyond unreasonable. But the initial point that he
Can he use deadly force to protect property? Under what circumstances?
Most...
Home, not personality, to protect your
right,
home.
Right, defense of habitation. There is a distinction between defense of habitation...
Yeah, there's a distinction between protecting a your dwelling and protecting some personality.
Yes, Your Honor. Under common law, it's either... A lot of times it's tied into defense of self, or if the person entering the home is committing or intending to commit a felony therein. So here, I mean, there's no reasonable apprehension, and this kind of goes to the subjective part of defense of property.
Well, if there's testimony, namely the appellant, that he swung at him first, if he's going into his house and he's swinging at him, in other words, it's an assault, isn't that some evidence that he was placed in fear of a trespass on his property and the commission of an offense therein?
If the facts were, even as appellant said, that he came into the doorway swinging at appellant, then he might have a much stronger argument. But the facts, even the facts as he says them, don't show that. He says specifically, as soon as he came to he saw him in the doorway, he immediately pushed him while saying, get the fuck out. He says, such as SS stood there, or after being pushed back, was now in the porch area. He stood there, he pushed him again, and then he describes how he had a different demeanor. He was basically had this demeanor, I'm not going anywhere. And at that point, he says, special SS then tries to punch him because apparently, I guess he was agitated. He got pushed twice and not knowing exactly why.
I have two legal questions for you.
Yes,
the first is, same as with appellant, if the defense of castle defense is not available in some jurisdiction with respect to guests, but is in the military jurisdiction, is there a military reason why we should adopt one rule or the other as a matter of law?
Your Honor, I don't have a good answer for a military-specific reason.
So leave the law as it is.
I would leave the law as it is. I can't think of a military distinction between invited guests or uninvited guests.
It's not a trick question. It's just an opportunity to ask the question. The next question is the Rule 920 in some of our case law says the sum evidence test is met when, without regard to its source of credibility, evidence has been admitted upon which members might rely if they so choose. And then sometimes our case law sticks the word might reasonably rely if they so choose. Which is it?
We argue the best course of action is reasonable. But
then doesn't that cancel out the whole concept of without regard to credibility?
I think the distinction here, Your Honor, is there needs to be a low test to get at least some evidence in that it raises the issue that the military judges then has a sua sponte duty to then instruct upon. But once you go beyond that, I guess what we're looking at here is whether or not a reasonable panel could have reasonably found that the defense of property was a viable defense. We're arguing that reasonably it wasn't. Just as we...
But that's a different issue, which is, was there prejudice or anything like that?
Yes.
You're not arguing...
No,
I'm just trying to clean up what the sum evidence test is, not ultimately address whether there was prejudice here.
No, it would be a low standard, Your Honor. Sum evidence raised.
Thank you.
This case is a lot like U.S. v. Marbury. Now, the appellant in U.S. v. Marbury actually acted more reasonably than the appellant in here. Sergeant Marbury there was a small female, and the victim was a master of martial arts. She had been punched in the face by the victim before the ensuing scuffle. Sergeant Marbury also unsuccessfully sought to enlist the help of her fellow NCOs to remove the victim from her room. Said all the NCOs just made a crude joke and laughed at her. It's only then that Sergeant Marbury ended up grabbing a kitchen knife and going to try and scare away the victim from her room. Now, this court still found, after that case, that Sergeant Marbury's actions were unreasonable as to the defense of property. Now, in this case, the appellant was an NCO, and the victim was a soldier. So he had options to resolve this issue. The appellant never told the victim to, you know, stand at ease or stand down. The appellant could have enlisted the help of Sergeant Scott, the squad leader, who he allegedly said he called later, but Senator Scott actually denied that fact. And also, appellant could have simply shut the door. He said he was, at worst, in the doorway, and then he says he pushed him onto the porch. So at worst, we know from even the photos in the joint appendix, you know, the hinges were on the inside, doors weren't really closed to the inside. He could have just stepped back and closed the door and called the police, and that was in the end of it. Instead, appellant ventured out and then pulled a handgun. Again, we have a handgun here, not a knife that was used in Marbury. So again, Sergeant Marbury's actions were found to be unreasonable by this court, who actually were much more reasonable than appellant's actions here. And the offense of property was not a viable defense in either case. And one last point is that appellant's own statement, when he says, if we get into a fist fight and this dude knocks me out, what's going to happen to my family, my house, my girlfriend? This shows that the defense of property was necessarily predicated in this case, or in the facts of this case, on self-defense. If you look at the position of where appellant was, he was standing in the doorway. The rest of his house that he explains that he was so concerned about is all behind him. So he's saying that he was under apprehension, that Special SS, the victim, was coming at him, and if he knocks me out, then that's, you know, going to give him the opportunity to roam around the house and do damage or trespass or whatever. It's only because of his position that if he got knocked out, that necessarily shows that self-defense would have been necessarily essential issue.
Was his theory that he believed that he was going to harm his house, or was his theory that he was a trespasser and he wanted him to leave?
Under his quote, Your Honor, I would say that he was worried about what was going to happen to his home. There is some evidence that later on, after he already pulled the weapon, that he wanted Ms. R.A., who was still in the car, to get leave the driveway area. So I guess there's some evidence, I guess, raised that he was concerned also about the driveway or the curtilages of his property. But his main concern, what concerns us here, because this is how he raised it, is his concern for the home, what was going to happen, whether or not the victim was going to knock him out and then do whatever to the house. So in sum, as the panel members found, the government disproved self-defense beyond a reasonable doubt. Any additional instruction on the defense of property, given the particular facts of this case, would afford no benefit to the appellant. Thus, any error was harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. And any further questions, we ask this honorable court to confirm the decision of the Army Court.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for the appellant, you have an opportunity for rebuttal.
First, I'd like to address the court's question that what's the best evidence that Sergeant Davis feared Specialist SS would enter his home? Look at the Joint Appendix at page 131. Sergeant Davis is testifying, I headed back to the door to yell at my wife to get back in the house. Trial counsel, after you did that, or defense counsel, what's the next thing that happened? As I approached the door to open it, Specialist SS is coming into the door. So he's got Specialist SS coming into the door, according to Sergeant Davis. And I reiterate again that the question isn't really so much of what's reasonable, what's unreasonable for this court to determine. It's really what the panel properly instructed. Could a rational panel, and the government has the burden of proof beyond reasonable doubt, could a rational panel have come to the same conclusion had they been properly instructed? And as this court warned against in Rodwell, as cited by the ACCA decision in United States versus Hearn, Courts of appeal are cautioned against engaging in the, quote, risky business of attempting to infer how court members might have voted if properly instructed. And given that this case is so distinguishable from Marbury with regard to the fact that there are so many facts in contention, unlike Marbury where there is undisputed facts, this court should follow that guidance and be cautioned against engaging in the risky business of trying to speculate as to how court members might have ruled had they been properly instructed. This court, addressing the question of the defense of Castle, this court should adopt a an instruction that allows service members to eject guests from their property.
The current instruction in the bench book?
Yes, Your Honor.
There's not a military reason to change it?
Yeah, exactly. Yes, Your Honor.
What about the Article 32 question?
I was unable to get an answer to that question, sir.
You didn't just read the entire record of trial?
No, that didn't happen. Okay. I don't have enough time, sir, in about 20 minutes to go through the whole thing, but I can subside it and get back to you, sir.
Counsel, do I take it from your answer to the Chief Judge's question with respect to the instruction that it's your view that this case is about ejecting a trespasser as opposed to protecting the property from harm, from physical harm?
Both, Your Honor. It's more a matter of could a rational panel have.
So in your view, the evidence supports both?
I believe the evidence supports both, Your Honor.
Which is your better argument, then?
I would say defending against a trespass. In regards to Sergeant Davis's subjective thoughts, that he was in fear of what was going to happen to his property. He's got Specialist SS larger than him that had already struck him, according to Sergeant Davis and Mrs. Davis, that what more was there for Sergeant Davis to do in order to keep Specialist SS from, as Sergeant Davis says, from coming into the door and Joint Appendix 131. Pending further questions.
There are no further questions. Court thanks both counsel. The case is now submitted. And we'll stand in recess until 10:20 on that clock. Thank you very much.
Court stands in recess until 10:20.